It is somewhat of a dog-themed service. I love dogs. I'm somewhat of a dog lady. But before we get back to that, I want to share with you another story. And some of you, if you listen to This American Life, you may have heard this story a couple of weeks ago. Comedy writer Lindy West is a feminist and a writer who talks a lot about body image and women's rights. And in response to this, she receives a lot of harassment and what's called trolling on the internet, which is people picking fights and writing horribly mean and cruel comments on the things you write. She gets constantly harassed on the internet. She gets death threats. She gets mocked for her appearance, for being fat. Really horrible, worst things you can imagine. And one day, after she had written a particular piece, this was about a year and a half ago, one of these internet trolls did something really, really heartless. He made a fake Twitter account to post mean things about her. And he did it using the name and photograph of her dead dad. Her dad, who had passed away from cancer 18 months prior. The bio of the Twitter account was, "Embarrassed father of an idiot. Other two kids are fine, though." And the person had set his location to Dirt Hole in Seattle. Common wisdom is that if someone is mean and harassing on the internet, you should ignore them, which she had done. And she'd also tried reporting people to Twitter, and none of that had really worked. And so this time she thought she would do something different. And she wrote about it on the blog that she worked for. And later on she said this, "I stopped obsessing over what he wanted and just did what felt best to me that day. I wrote about it publicly, online. I made myself vulnerable, and I didn't hide the fact that it hurt. And the next morning, I woke up to an email. Hey, Lindy, I don't know why or even when I started trolling you. I think my anger towards you stems from your happiness with your own being. It offended me because it served to highlight my unhappiness with my own self. I'm sorry." In the radio story, which I recommend you listen to, it's touching, Lindy talks about this experience, and then this being This American Life, they say, well, why don't we call him? And so we hear their conversation, and it is touching, and it's painful, and he talks about why he did what he did. Lindy says later, "I write a lot about body image and about the stigma and discrimination that fat people face and about being a fat woman. And he told me that at the time he was about 75 pounds heavier than he wanted to be. He hated his body. He was miserable. And reading about fat people, particularly fat women, accepting and loving themselves as they were infuriated him for reasons he couldn't articulate at the time." And he apologizes, and Lindy ends her time, and they cry. Lindy says, "I didn't mean to forgive him, but I did." And she ends the story with this, "Trolls still waste my time and tax my mental health on a daily basis. But honestly, I don't wish them any pain. Their pain is what got us here in the first place. That's what I learned from my troll. If what he said is true, that he just needed to find some meaning in his life, then what a heartbreaking diagnosis for all the people who are still at it. I can't give purpose and fulfillment to millions of anonymous strangers, but I can remember not to lose sight of their humanity the way they lost sight of mine." So today is about looking in the mirror, and I'm using that image of looking in the mirror as a metaphor or as a symbol for introspection, for self-examination, for what happens when we don't do that, and for having compassion for ourselves. And the sermon was inspired by a true story, which is the story you heard earlier that Allison told so well, is about my dog, Luba, who is a rescue dog with some issues. And I caught her one day actually growling at herself in the mirror. That's the other dog that looks like her. And when I mentioned this on the phone to my mother, she said that that was funny because she had caught her dog, who is named Phoebe, wagging her tail. And she thought, what are you wagging at? And she was wagging at her own reflection. And seeing my dog growling at her own reflection, knowing that she had some issues, some fear aggression issues, and then seeing her be aggressive towards herself made me think, like, that is such a rich metaphor for people and for how so often we walk through the world, you know, growling at ourselves by projecting our fears onto other people or by lashing out when we feel afraid and of course treating ourselves with aggression and with fear instead of with compassion. So this lashing out when we're afraid or upset about something, or I guess you could call it projecting our pain onto someone else, is not limited to rescue dogs with issues. Something I've done, maybe you have too. I think of this incident that happened to me a few years ago. I was living in Washington, D.C., and I spent some years working a job I liked and some years working a job I thought was okay. And then there was a time where I really, really didn't like my job. And one particular morning, I woke up feeling extra grouchy. And, you know, I don't know what particular project I was working on that I was feeling. I don't know if you've ever had a job where you feel like it's both boring and you're bad at it. And your boss is micromanaging. Like, that was kind of the situation. And I had just applied to seminary, and I was, I think, not consciously, but starting to realize unconsciously that my relationship with my partner wasn't going to survive my moving away and going to seminary. And I remember that some coal miners had just died in an explosion. I worked in workers' rights, and that was just, you know, it was just preventable and horrible. Anyway, so I'm on my way to work, and there's a woman protesting. And this is D.C., and there's a lot of protesting that goes on. And I happened to strongly, very strongly disagree with the sign that she was holding. And so what do you think I did in my grouchy mood? Was I walked right up to her, and I screamed in her face. What are you doing here? What makes you think this is your business? Why don't you go mind your own business somewhere else? And when I think about it now, I'm guessing that I did it because I was unhappy for other reasons, and that it felt easier to lash out at a stranger than to tell my boss how frustrated I was, or to face the fact that I felt ashamed of the mistakes I was making at work, or to have hard conversations with my partner. You know, yelling at a stranger, especially someone at the opposite side of a political spectrum, that felt safe. It felt like I could pretend, and it helped me pretend that the source of my suffering was outside, and it wasn't. It was inside. And that's not an original truth, the idea that our inner suffering and not dealing with it leads to more suffering, and then that causes us to inflict suffering on other people. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Zen master, wrote, "When another person makes you suffer, it is because he suffers deeply within himself, and his suffering is spilling over. He does not need punishment, he needs help. That is the message he is sending." And if Buddhist teaching isn't you know, doing that for you. You can also get at that same idea from secular research on psychology and shame and vulnerability. Brené Brown is a shame researcher who's done a lot of work on this, and she became famous for a TED talk on vulnerability a couple of years ago. And she did a series of interviews with people about shame and vulnerability, and the sort of out of that came some common things that we do to shield ourselves from feeling vulnerable or feeling uncomfortable. And one of those that she identified is this lashing out at other people. So it's not limited to rescue dogs with issues. And I gotta say though, when I did it that day with that protester, it didn't make me feel better. It actually made me feel too angry to work for most of the morning. And I think that's true. It doesn't make us feel better when we lash out. Going back to the dog theme, dog trainers will tell, or I have heard from dog trainers, that you want to interrupt anxious barking because the dog will just get more and more riled up and more aggressive. And that goes for people as well. We used to be told that it was important to vent our anger, that if you were angry at a person, what you could do is go punch a pillow. And increasingly they're finding, social science research is finding that that's not the case, and that when you tell someone who's angry to go punch a pillow, they're actually more likely to be aggressive later after that. Actually lashing out, growling at yourself in the mirror doesn't help. We end up hurting ourselves and we end up hurting other people. I don't think the protester, in my story, I don't think the protester was harmed that much. I think, you know, she was there to be provocative. I think that's the same impulse that led that man in Lindy's story to treat her so cruelly. The man wrote this, "I think my anger towards you stems from your happiness with your own being. It offended me because it served to highlight my unhappiness with my own self." And he said later that he, at the time, he felt fat and passionless and purposeless. And because Lindy spoke about accepting her own body, she seemed happy with something that he hated about himself, he took out his self-hatred on her. If I can't be happy with myself, why should you be? You're no better than I am. So it hurts. It hurts when we don't know what we're looking at when we look at the mirror. And so what to do? I think the first thing is to have awareness, to do what we can to be aware of what's going on for us, what's upsetting, what we're really dealing with. Sometimes a clue can be to look at what upsets you in other people. This is a common defense mechanism, right? Boy, I hate it when people do this. Sometimes means I do that and I really don't hate myself for doing that. As I was preparing this sermon, as part of my other job, I was waiting for someone to get back to me. And I was like, ugh, no one ever gets back to me. I hate it when people don't respond to my emails. Like, this is terrible. And then I got another email from someone about another matter saying, like, Elizabeth, you know, I've emailed you like several times about this and I could really use a response. Ugh, I hate it when people don't, oh shoot. I hate it when I don't get back to people. So that's something that I'm working on. And it's not easy to look at one's flaws or times when we've failed to live up to our own expectations of ourselves, whether it's emails or treating people in a certain way. It's not easy. But I do know that I'm a happier and more grounded person when I do that. So I recommend that to you also. For me, doing that kind of looking in the mirror means meditation. It means therapy, and it means being in dialogue with people that I know, who I trust, and who can help me do that. And it means doing that with compassion. And for me, that can be the hard part, right? So if one extreme of reacting to our flaws is to deny that they're happening and to project them onto other people or to lash out, then the other extreme is to get stuck in feeling ashamed. I can't believe I did that. What an idiot I am. Like a lot of people in this culture, I struggle with perfectionism. And there's a certain gift of that, which is, you know, being motivated to do well is good. And I've realized recently that for years I had let my self-worth get tangled up with how I was doing and how I was performing. So, you know, if I did this flawlessly, then I'm so good, I'm a great person. And then, if I made a mistake, I'm an idiot. And how can they trust me with anything? And I'm just terrible. And that can be the danger of, and that's probably why we lash out, because we don't want to get stuck in feeling ashamed. And what I'm increasingly trying to do is to invite compassion for myself when I do that. Some of you may be familiar with the work of Kristen Neff. She's a researcher on mindful self-compassion. And she talks about looking at the self when you make a mistake or do something, looking at the self as you might look at a child, or a young person who is hurt, and just think, oh, they're there. Oh, yeah, that happens. You know, I'm sorry, I'm here. And I sometimes think about my dog. Not literally my dog, but to imagine, you know, I'm also a scared little animal sometimes. And I imagine the little soft and furry being that's inside me who is scared that she won't belong, who is just wants to be safe, and who is trying to protect her soft underbelly. Oh, are you scared? Oh, it's okay. And when I have compassion for myself, then we are taught, then I can have compassion for others. And that's one reason that I wanted to share Lindy West's story with you, is I think that's one thing that's really powerful about it, is her compassion for these people who are really very terrible to her. And when she says at the end, I don't wish them any pain, their pain is what got us here in the first place. If what he said is true, that he just needed to find some meaning in his life, then what a heartbreaking diagnosis for all the people who are still at it. I can't give purpose and fulfillment to millions of anonymous strangers, but I can remember not to lose sight of their humanity the way they lost sight of mine. And from the outside looking in, it really seems to me like compassion for the people who were harassing her changed and transformed Lindy's experience of that. She's still hurt, she says, she's still mad, but by refusing to participate in their dehumanization, by refusing to do the same thing to them that they did to her, it seems like she's more able to hold on to her own worth and dignity. How we respond to others has a profound effect on how we experience the world. And how amazing to have compassion for the suffering that is causing someone else to cause you suffering. And I want to be clear, because this is kind of a slippery thing, right? Like, I don't mean just, if bad things are happening, just deal with them and accept them. We are taught that Jesus taught to turn the other cheek. And I'm sure you have heard religious people or people in authority misuse that in a way, and to use it to say, well, just accept the status quo. And it's really been dangerously used to tell women, to tell people who are vulnerable in ways, to accept a status quo that is oppressive or abusive. Just turn the other cheek and you don't need to change anything. Just have compassion, it's fine. That's not true. That's not spiritual. I don't think it's what Jesus really would have meant. I have a seminary degree, so I can tell you that. So it's tricky, because it is both true that it is powerful to have compassion for someone who is causing suffering in the world, that is powerful, and that how we respond to people changes how they respond to us, it changes our experience, that is true. And it is also true that we need to do things to the extent that we can to end oppression, to end a status quo that isn't good. And so I think one thing we're called to do is to try to hold those two truths in tension. It's kind of advanced spiritual homework, but it's okay because we're here, we're in spiritual community. And I think that's one thing that we are called to do here, is to wrestle with difficult and complex and seemingly contradictory things about our existence, because our existence is pretty complex and seemingly contradictory. Right? So it's both true that compassion is powerful and that change is important. So that's the good news, is that we're in a good place to do that, this fellowship, this spiritual community. It is a good place to develop compassion. It is a good place to develop compassion for ourselves, whether that's through spiritual practice. So I challenge you, or invite you, or recommend, do that. Work with a spiritual practice that works on your heart. Compassion, that's building compassion for yourself and for other people. For some people, that might mean meditation. I've been learning a lot about accepting my own limits by doing yoga, I will tell you. It might mean prayer. It might mean, sitting in the knowledge of God's love for you and for all people. Building compassion. Spiritual community is also a place where we can practice holding up the mirror for one another. This is a place, Unitarian Universalism, as I understand it, is trying to do something countercultural in having us be in community in a different kind of way than we are in the dominant culture. In the dominant culture, we do a lot of lashing out and, getting my thing done and you get your thing done, and I treat you, as someone said earlier, as a means instead of an end. And here we're trying to relate to one another as equals and to see the inherent worth and dignity of that person. You could say the spark of the divine in that person. So we can be a place where, not in a shaming and blaming way, but if someone is out of our covenant with one another, say, I think that hurt when you did that. And I think let's look at our covenant together. And then it's a place to wrestle with the deep and complex truths about our existence. And, it can just be a place where we practice wagging our tails at each other. You know, like, I'm so glad to see you. Oh, you're so glad to see me. Oh, we're so glad to be here. And inviting that welcome, there's a certain, I think there's a spiritual power in unabashed joy and welcome in that way. Our culture can be kind of into being cool, and I don't really want to be so excited about it. And, you know, that's a spiritual lesson from my dog, is a little wagging goes a long way. So try it. Try wagging at yourself in the mirror, metaphorically, however flawed and scarred you may be. Work on your heart. Wrestle with complex things, and do it together. And have the trust that when we all have the courage to look in the mirror, the rest of the outside world can be transformed. Thank you.